Hey, got the morning show with Aaron. And in the studio, I've got John Lawson. Good morning, John.
G'day.
So, are you ready, John?
I'm never sure I'm ready, but see how it goes.
See how it goes. So, I did want to focus a little more on the annual plan stuff. And generally, I wanted to focus on council and its money and the fact that we had a pretty serious discussion with Lisa Thompson and Mike Keir, who is the councillor for Tamahere, but he also has a batch out here. And I don't know if you heard in a part of that, John, he said that he was pushing to put a suggested rates rise of 20% on the general rate so that it would get people actually discussing the problems that they're facing. But obviously he was in the minority on that one, and they went for 13.75.
I think he's probably optimistic as well.
That he would get a debate.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, yes. Maybe he is. Maybe
probably needs at least 100%, if not more.
I don't know. I mean, Hamilton seems to be having a debate at 25%. Like, that's a pretty frightening figure for a lot of people. but they said 13.75%. That's enough. That's what they need to keep the lights on, basically. It's enough to account for inflation, which we know is not at 13%, but inflation in the construction industry seems to be running at a higher rate. Costs seem to be going up at a higher rate than inflation.
Except, as you pointed out, it's not just the sort of basic things that they're paying for, but they're also paying for odd frills here and there, like $200,000 for traffic lights on the bridge.
I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen, John, since I brought it up.
But it is in there. It's just an example of the sort of frills which are in there that maybe they don't actually need to spend money on.
Yeah, so that one came from... Lisa said there was a draft transport plan or something like that for Raglan that the staff were working on, and it came out of that, and they will actually bring that to the public for some consultation hopefully soon. But I don't think, like, this is the usual thing that happens, folks. John found this, and most of the community, I don't think anyone on the community board knew about it. I'm not sure that Lisa had yet, because it was quite early days when you found it. So yeah, some staff, and that was my question, did this come from the community or did it come from staff? And it came from staff. So, and we know what happened the last time they tried to put traffic lights on the bridge.
And the trouble is, these things get hidden away in there, and there's probably a whole load of other 200,000s here and there that we haven't spotted at all, or which aren't even mentioned specifically.
Well, hard to know. By the way, if you wonder why I was laughing about the last time they tried to put traffic lights up and you don't know, it's because they were temporary ones, but people threw them in the water. So, most people know
vandalism.
That. Yeah. Most people know that, but I just realised might be someone listening who doesn't. So the first question I asked them was, because we've had this kerfuffle with the government not giving enough information around roading or around Three Waters for councils to make plans. So normally this year they'd be doing their long term plan. That's that every 3 years they update their 10-year spending plan. They couldn't do that this year, so we've just rolled over another annual plan, so it's a one-year look at it, and then next year they'll get into the details. So I was like, okay, so is this what's in this plan just the same as before, or is it part of the new one? And I think it's part of the new one, what they'd hope to do anyway.
Yeah.
that is part of the long-term plan that they were wanting to implement.
Yeah, as everyone's saying, the government's so up in the air about what's happening that nobody in local government knows what they're doing, really. They can't predict, probably can't even predict a year, but certainly not beyond a year.
No, and I think the main reason they can't predict is because the government didn't have, they said, well, we're going to can Three Waters, but they didn't actually, I don't think they had much of a plan, certainly nothing with details that the sort of details that councils need.
There's a whole load of funding for roading that councils don't know whether it's coming their way or not.
Well, I mean, National's talking about roads of national significance again.
Well, also local significance, and they've not specified those at all. The national significance ones, at least they've set out which ones they are. But the local ones, there's a whole bunch of funding and no indication as to where that might go.
Yeah, there was the number $7 billion was pulled out of the air at the... I don't know where it came from. That's why I'm saying pulled out of the air at the community board meeting. I can't remember who said it. I think it was the financial officer, Alison Diaz, but please don't attribute that to her. But I can't think out who else it would have been. That $7 billion will be probably likely to be shifted from your local roads into roads of national significance. And it's...
I'm not sure that that's true, because they're generally allocating more money to roads, both local and national.
Okay.
A lot more to the national than to the local, but they are also trying to repair the holes in local roads.
They keep talking about potholes. Yes. Are there that many potholes around?
Well, the government thinks there are, so they've put that as one of the main emphases in the government policy statement.
Is that because the National Party MPs have been driving around and they're going, oh, there's potholes. Oh, I'm going to do something about potholes. Are they operating at that level?
I think probably a few months ago there were quite a lot of potholes, but Labour also realised that they needed to do something about it, and I think in the final months of government they did. Probably too late for people, voters and the National Party to notice that it happened. But
that sums up everything with our major political parties. Okay, all right, let's not get distracted by that. All we're saying is that next year is going to be the serious year where council has a look at its real serious look at its finances. And John, they haven't got enough money. They can't get enough money anymore. Like, you look at the whole history of this country since we began urbanisation. It's, you know, raising standards, raising standards, raising standards. Do you think we're now at the point where we have to say, okay, we can't actually afford to just keep raising standards?
From my left-wing point of view, we're at the point where we need to say we need to raise taxes, because we've had, what, 3 decades of reducing taxes, and we were supposed to have a trickle-down effect, and we haven't really noticed much of that.
So when we say raising taxes, raising taxes on who? Because as soon as you say that...
The people who don't pay much tax at the moment.
Who's that?
Which are the richest people in the country, because they employ the right accountants and so on to organise their affairs so that they don't pay very much.
So when we say raise taxes, the thing I always want to zero in on is that, because what happens is it makes a whole, like about half the people in the country panic, because they think that it's going to be aimed at them, or that one day they'll be earning enough money that it will be aimed at them. But I think it's our corporate sector that is underpaying. There's also the capacity for a financial transactions tax. So I sort of think, I feel like it's only the top 1% that, because they've got a lot of money. A little bit of extra tax on them would bring a lot of extra spending into the government and sort out what's... Yeah, okay.
Because as far as local rates are concerned, I don't think we ought to be paying that third of rates that goes to roading, because that ought to be paid from people who are using the roads, because we keep hearing about targeted rates, and yet there's never a targeted rate for people using the roads.
But John, you're one of the few people who doesn't drive a car or own a car. Like,
5% of us, yeah.
It's such a small minority, and all the and they just don't care, or they're unaware, or that's so far off the radar, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Well, it still seems to me to be a bad way of funding it, because, and as you're implying, we all pay for it one way or another, but it seems to me that paying for it when you actually get in a car and burn petrol is a better way of paying for it and discouraging people polluting the world than it is to actually pay it through your rates, which means you can't vary your behaviour at all. You just pay for what everybody else is doing.
Also, I don't normally have a lot of sympathy for people who own more than one house or have a house and a batch or anything like that. But in that instance, they'd be paying double the roading rates, but they've still only one person and can only drive the normal amount that they drive. So they're being kind of overrated for that particular issue.
And those of us in towns are subsidising those who live in the country, because if I paid for the bit of road in front of my house, it would be way cheaper than paying for the kilometres of roads that are out in the country. And you were looking at some figures showing that Waikato per person's got more roads than most of the other Waikato districts.
Or any district that was on the list. So I've got sent these comparative statistics that the council has put together. So they're comparing Waipa District, Matamata Piako District, Hamilton City Council, Western Bay of Plenty District Council, Waikato District Council, and Auckland Council. And folks, we are the champions when it comes to metres of road per ratepayer. 74.7 metres per ratepayer in the Waikato District, compared to, who's the closest? Matamata Piako, 63. Waipa is only 48. Hamilton is 11. And Auckland is 13.6. So you can see the massive difference. It's like five times as much.
And it's about 5 metres outside the house of most of us, but those who live in the country make up for that and bring the average up to that 70-odd.
So what the people living in the country will say is, well, you've got to have trucks coming in to get the food that you eat, you all you townies.
But then you pay for it in your transport and you don't pay for it in your rent. Which means that things like the railways, which the government's talking about cutting back on and saying how much we have to subsidise them, you'd actually see where the true subsidies were going.
So I think you were saying that earlier that paying for the roads through the rates is part of the problem. And certainly if it's true that we all benefit from the rural roads, then the nation benefits from the rural roads. Everyone in Auckland City benefits from the rural roads because that's how the food gets from the farms to the city. Then if we were paying for the roads purely through the national tax, then that would be a more equitable way of doing it. Because at the moment, it's the people living in the largely rural districts like ours that are paying extra for the roads so that people in Auckland can get their food. Did I sum that up?
Partly, but it's also the question of whether we value things like public transport, because the regional councils also got an annual plan or a long-term plan consultation.
They actually managed to get their long-term plan out, didn't they?
Yes. I suppose they don't have the three waters, so it's not so bad for them.
No, but their transport, like the government's made their draft policy statement for transport, but it's still yet to be... Maybe they think the government's just going to ram it through no matter what anyone comments. That's actually probably a fair assumption, so they probably just went ahead.
Yeah, because the only thing that's going to be affected by that is the amount that we pay for bus fares, because they're working on the basis that we pay a fifth of the bus fares from the actual fares themselves and four-fifths from rates.
Yeah.
And the government's saying, no, it ought to be 40 or 50% coming from the bus user, which means... doubling or tripling the current bus fares.
That's kind of a user pays thought, but what's your thought, John?
Well, my thought is that they're asking us to pay $3.46 for a year for subsidising Raglan buses, and that if you even multiply that by 10, you might then have a decent bus service and you might not have any fares, but you'll actually get people using the bus. And cutting down on the number of crashes on the main road and the congestion in Dinsdale, and also on the single lane bridge, and also cutting the amount of emissions that we create when we get to and from Hamilton. And it seems to me that compared with the other figures we're talking about, that $30 or $40 a year would be good value for that. Whereas in the options that were being given by regional council, they're saying, well, if you don't live within 5 kilometres of a bus stop, then you should be paying even less than that, 21 cents a year. It seems to me that whether we pay for it through our local rates, district rates, or through our regional rates doesn't make too much difference, but it shows that massive difference between what was subsidising the roads and what was subsidising the buses, because I pay well over $1,000 a year to subsidise the roads, and apparently I pay $3.46 a year to subsidise the buses. So, you know, there's a massive difference there. And, you know, if we're thinking of climate change and things like that, or even safety, then getting more people on the buses is a good idea.
What about wear and tear on the roads? Like if you've got 40 people on a bus instead of 40 cars, or let's say 35 cars, which is probably more realistic, is 35 cars harder on the road than one bus?
Well, the damage to roads generally is estimated at about the square of the weight of the vehicle. So if you've got a 10-ton bus, then that's doing about 100 times more damage to the road than a 1-ton car.
Really getting very far with that.
If you've got close to 100 people on your bus, then you're doing about the same damage. So, yeah, in terms of road wear, the buses are probably slightly more damaging than the cars.
All right, that's not an argument then.
But in terms of crashes and in terms of fuel consumption, the buses are way better.
Yeah, and in congestion. Okay. All right. So we've kind of leapt around. How did we end up over here, John?
We're going all over the place, but as usual.
Yeah, let's say there's a meeting for people who want to know what's happening with the annual plan, which is where, so you can find out why the rates have gone up 13.75% by asking people directly. That's in the Town Hall Supper Room this Friday. So was there anything significant, apart from we kept talking about the traffic lights for the bridge, which I'm fairly certain are going to be turned down. Anything else significant that you pulled out of there, John?
Well, of course, there's the rate increase itself, which, as you were talking on Friday, is well above inflation. The councillors were defending it and saying that's roughly the inflation on construction costs.
Well, those were kind of my words, but yeah, to keep doing this, there's a problem with the way we calculate inflation in this country, and I've said this before. So I just don't think our inflation figures are accurate. I do believe them when they say that that's the cost to just keep doing what they're doing and not cut back services. I think that's kind of the economic world we're in at the moment.
Yep, because part of a consultation from both regional and district council is, do you want more services or less? So quite a few of the regional council questions are saying, do you want to pay this much or do you want to pay this much more? So, for example, on pest control biodiversity, they're asking whether we want to carry on paying the same amount, which isn't going to keep up with inflation, or whether we want to pay roughly $8 or roughly $15 for pest control. And it seems to me that with pest control not keeping up with the pests, we need to be actually increasing the amount that we're spending.
What about weed control, like wilding weeds?
Well, yeah, that's all part of the pest control, so okay. it's all under the biodiversity.
Because I now have a different view on that after going to the Weedbuster Science Night a few weeks back. That's a potentially quite a serious problem, and better to spend the money now before the weeds get out of control than to have to spend 10 times as much later on, or even 100 times as much, God knows. That's the sort of exponential growth that we're about to see in terms of weeds overtaking our native bush and other parts of the country. So don't forget also, John's talking about the regional council here, and I was talking about a annual plan drop-in with the district council on Friday, so that's not for the regional council. So all the stuff about pests, you can't talk about that with the district council. Huh. What a confusion, John.
That's why it seems to me we need a single council rather than lots of separate councils.
Well, so there was, before the last local body election, which is a year and a half ago now, there was a government body developing some ideas for how to redo local government, and that arrived to deafening silence. I haven't heard about it since. Have you heard anyone talking about it?
No.
Rightio.
But these ideas pop up and then people move on and forget about them. So it applies to all sorts of things.
And this government didn't come in with a desire to renew local body stuff. They didn't come in with many constructive ideas, full stop. So we're going to have to wait for... Like, it did happen in the 90s. There was a review of the local body situation. And we've got what we've got now because of that. But let's forget that then.
I think it was just before that, wasn't it? 1989, when they set up the current system.
Yeah.
Talking of things that have been forgotten reminds me about that area of corrugated iron down Wernera Street. I don't know if you noticed, but there was something of a Facebook discussion on whether that was ever going to be developed. Because I think, as far as I know, the people who lease that area from the Harbour Board have permission to build shops there, similar to the ones that are down Volcom Alley.
Well, it's a matter of whether they can be bothered.
But we keep hearing about shops having to close because there's not enough room and the rents are too high.
Well,
related to that is a future-proof document which has just come out. Which is suggesting that we need a lot more commercial land in Raglan.
So but just back a step. So let's hypothesize a hypothetical response to that. if you're a landlord owning several buildings in the middle of town and there's pressure on the rents and the rents are high, you're doing fine. If you've got this piece of land that you then build a building on, and that takes time and is stressful, and then at the end of it there's too many shops in town and the rents are forced down, you've shot yourself in the foot, purely from a financial perspective. I'm not saying that's what would happen, but I think that's something that should be considered to be part of the calculations.
Yes, well, I think you're right there, but then we've got Future Proof, which says that council should identify additional industrial land to ensure that its economy is not constrained due to capacity constraints. And they've got similar comments about commercial land. And
that's not industrial land we're talking about.
No, but as I say, they've got similar comments about the commercial land and saying that we've not got enough of it.
That's certainly the case, because so here's some things. Like, I think Swap would like to be in Raglan, and if they could find a building that didn't have the issues that the last one did, and we'll just leave that hanging.
And they've done a great job of moving into the old regional council building in Hamilton.
Yeah, I've been in there. It's actually, they've got a fantastic site there. I mean, but I feel like they would like to be back here. I know the $2 shop, although they said they didn't have any problems and that it was time to wrap up after 10 years. They did say that also they'd been looking for other places to rent and couldn't find anything. So
it's a problem when you call yourself a $2 shop and you've got inflation.
Well, it was $2 plus more, so they did cover that. So I think, you know, and the people that are going into where Swap was, that they've been waiting forever for a place to rent. So there definitely is a lack of buildings. Someone needs to build a building.
Got some, as you say, there's not the commercial incentive, so however much land you make available, are we actually going to get it? Or are people just going to land bank it and say, oh, well, we're making enough out of what we've got, so why develop anything else?
Yeah. Plus, there's also, I mean, that Harbour Board land, it's subject to a treaty claim. I don't know what effect that treaty claim has on the Harbour Board leases.
Well, they've still got the resource consent to build those shops.
Yeah, but like if that land gets returned from the Harbour Board to the appropriate hapu, then does that change the rules about the lease in perpetuity? Probably not, because that's a national legal issue, isn't it, that Marama Davidson's actually looking at.
You sound like you're better informed than I am.
Yeah, for once. But that's it. That's the extent of my knowledge. I think I answered my own question, though. So I thought maybe if that was all up in the air, that the leaseholder, current leaseholder, would be like, oh, I'm just going to wait to find out what happens before I do anything. So, yeah, someone needs to build something. You got any money, John? I got a couple of bucks.
One of the advantages of being a pensioner and having a work pension as well as a state pension is that you end up quite wealthy, and especially if you own your own house.
So that's a yes, then?
Well, everyone talks about pensioners being poor, but there certainly are poor pensioners. So if you don't own your own house and you only have a state pension, then it's a really difficult life. But
you don't even own a car, so your living costs are probably quite low.
Yeah, my most expensive purchase is usually a computer. So yeah.
Yeah, how's that one going? Is it all right?
It's running out of memory. But
that's probably because you've got 200 tabs open.
Yeah.
That's usually the problem with John's computers. They need high-powered computers that gamers use so he can open a million tabs.
They only make them at the moment with 2 terabytes of memory, which is not quite enough.
Okay. Okay, let's get our focus back. So another thing that you were talking about was, and I wanted to talk about this, the Future Proof. All right, that Future Proof document that talks about where the best places for the Waikato, is it Waikato district or region?
The region.
Region, to build some extra industrial capacity. And you've put on the Whangarei Environmental Defence page this piece of information, and it shows Tarapa is the best place and we're one of the worst places.
Oh, we are the worst place.
Yeah. The worst place. Okay, but
which isn't surprising because we're at the end of a long windy road.
Yeah, so this is the wrong question for us, right? This is the question about how to make the economy good for the Waikato region. This is not the question we should be asking, which is how to make our community good for the people who live in it, right? Really different question. So for those purposes, we should be increasing our industrial capacity so that there is work for people here and ways of supporting and manufacturing things that can be sold in the local community. And it would save people driving over to, apparently, Tarapa, where all the future capacity is going to be built, according to this document. So, yeah, we built a little factory. It would be a factory, but, you know, if there's more work here, it's better than people having to go to Hamilton for work.
Except it often doesn't work out that way, because there's an awful lot of work available at the moment on Rangitahi, and most of the builders there come from Hamilton. So you end up with people commuting both ways.
Well, that's, yeah, that is because that the people who are building in Rangitahi are not from Raglan, and so they don't they don't know the Raglan builders. Like, I mean, when I first arrived in Raglan, I didn't employ Raglan builders. I used to come from the building industry. I would never employ anyone I didn't have a recommendation for, because it could really blow up in your face. So you need to be in town and get to know people before you start making those kind of decisions. But yeah, and what was the other thing I was going to say about that?
Well, and the question, it's a document that they're consulting on with limited consultation at the moment. I don't think they've even made it publicly available on their website.
So who's future-proof is all the region, the councils in our region
getting together? Yeah, so I think people who've already submitted to future-proof have had consultation on this, but presumably they're going out to wider consultation eventually, but this is one of the sort of pre-consultation discussions, I think, which is going on.
Yeah, so that's important for the region to have a future-proof strategy, but Raglan needs its own separate future-proof strategy that just looks at things from the perspective
like
of our community.
Like a structure plan, as you were discussing on Friday with the councillors. Yeah.
So it was good to have Mike Keir in the studio as another councillor, because I just say to him straight, you know, like, there's a whole lot of other communities in our district ahead of Raglan in the queue for a structure plan. Can we jump the queue? And he's like, no, that's not going to happen. And I took that to represent the views of most of the councillors in the district, and particularly the ones whose communities might get the queue jumping effect. So he sent
Tamahere has ended up with the bus locally, and we haven't. Yeah.
Well, closer to Hamilton. But he then sent me a couple of days later. He sent me a document that the Matangi community has put together. They're basically making their own structure plan with support from council staff, but it's been driven locally with they've got a community committee there. So we have talked here on the morning show about maybe we just go and make our own structure plan, and it was kind of like an idea. But now that I see that the council staff would actually take it seriously if a community did this, I think our community should do this.
Because we have got quite a lot to work on. So we've got the 2009 structure plan that the council put forward, and most of that was good, but there were a few bits that weren't, and because we objected to the bits that weren't, they took it away, and we haven't seen it since.
There was, the bits that people didn't like was the attempt to turn Cliff Street into Mount Maunganui. That was particularly unpopular, and there was
limit the industrial area on Cross Street as well. Well, not Cross Street, Park Road.
So some of the community responded quite violently to that. So we shot ourselves in the foot a little bit there. But nonetheless, here we are in 2024, basically 15 years later. Let's get on with the job.
But we have got the documents to work on, because we've also got the blueprint that was done, was it 2018? And we've also got Raglan Naturally and a few other documents around. So it shouldn't be too difficult to put something together from those various things.
Yeah.
So, it sounds like a good idea if we can get together and do it. I don't know whether it would be the community board that led it or whether it would be left to some other group.
Should we just do it, John? You and me.
Raglan Community Radio, right.
Yeah, the Raglan Community Radio structure plan.
Puts the radio at the centre of the town. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's right. If you look on the page, the radio will be right in the middle.
How big should our skyscraper be?
Well, we've got to get the transmitter up nice and high, don't we, John?
Okay, yep.
Yeah, so it's got to be pretty tall. Pretty tall. We have to build a new town hall. The future-proof thing. So, yeah, so the question, if you're talking about industrial capacity and future-proof stuff, the question we should be asking as Raglan is, we seem to be quite an innovative community. If we're attracting industry here, that should be the big picture of what we're attracting, or it should be in the picture as well. So I think those are the questions we should be asking, and the future-proof strategy for the Waikato region is all well and good, but it's not that relevant to us, I think, when it comes to industrial capacity. Because they're just basically saying, if you're on State Highway 1, that's a good place to build industrial capacity.
Yes.
Which is true, because the trucks can just pop in and pick up the gear. But people live all over the country, and so, different question, but you had an interesting thing that you said to me sometime a little while ago about the future-proof strategy, looking at State Highway 23, and you pointed some stuff out to them that surprised them. So do you remember that about the corridor study?
They've still not done the corridor study. They've done a corridor study for all the other growth areas, but I think the one for Raglan got put in the too difficult basket.
So a corridor study is basically a study of State Highway 23 and its capacity? Yep. Yeah, okay, that's the corridor to Raglan.
And how do you get State Highway 23 to cope with having traffic from 12,000 people rather than 3,000?
So yeah, so there's
four times as much traffic.
A council document looking 50 years ahead that said we could have a population of 12,000 people in the urban environment in Raglan. And I actually think we could have as many people as we want, because there's a housing crisis out there, and however much land we open up and how many houses we build, that's what will get sold. Right, we could end up
solving the housing crisis for the entire country if we wanted to, which we don't. But I'm just saying, right, there's an endless supply of people out there who would buy a house.
But then if you try and transport those people, you've got quite a cost problem, unless you just accept that they're stuck in a traffic jam and they keep crashing into each other.
And this is the corridor study issue that you talked about. So no one's done a corridor study, but did you provide some data for Future Proof that gave them an idea of what a corridor study would tell them?
Well, I tried to set out the basic problems, and I've not attempted to cost it. And it seems to me that the engineering skills are there to do it, but the money isn't, as we've just been talking about. There's a shortage of money for everything, and if you're going to try and improve State Highway 23 to a state where it's not killing people all the time, and it's not congested, and it doesn't fall apart when we have the next rainstorm, which might be coming later in the week.
yeah, yes.
I think it's just going to miss us, actually. Forecasts seem to be that it's heading over the sea up to Northland, and then we get the edge of it.
It looks ugly, I'd tell you that much. So our road at the moment, we already have quite a high crash rate, do we?
The roading authority produces a map which shows the number of crashes, or shows where the crashes are.
Yeah.
And there's red and black dots all the way along there showing serious crashes and deaths. So, yeah.
So
virtually every road junction has a problem, and some points in between as well.
So can we say it's a worse road than other roads?
That's why they were looking at putting an 80 limit on it.
Okay, right. So if we increase our population by, say, three times as much, and therefore there might be three times as many people using the road, that road's not ready for three times the load, is it?
Oh, I don't think so. And that's the issue that I put to the Future Proof Committee.
Given that it already has a high crash rate, let's say per person, what do you do? Like, do you have to? We wouldn't have to double lane it. That would be ridiculous. What would you do to make it safe for three times as many cars?
It does need to be slightly wider, because it seems to me that the first thing it needs is a medium barrier so that traffic doesn't crash into traffic coming the opposite way.
Yeah.
Because people are always going to sleep or taking corners too fast or things like that, and they end up on the opposite side of the road.
Or we get rid of some of the corners and smooth everything off.
I think of the only example when I was driving and I had a problem on that road, and because there was nothing around, I was able to jackknife the car and trailer and end up pointing the opposite way. But if there'd been anything else around, then I would have hit it, or they would have hit me.
What happened, John? Did you spin out or something with a trailer?
I just picked up some concrete blocks in Hamilton and had a trailer load full of them. And I didn't know that trailers took control of cars if you go too fast.
Oh, yes, because you don't drive that much, or you haven't driven a loaded trailer before,
or hadn't done, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it seems to me it's something that ought to be publicised rather more.
Well, you know it now,
yeah.
And let's say our listeners know it now too. Okay, so all right, so that's your experience, and as you were saying, you spun out, but it was okay, no cars came.
Yeah.
But that was a while ago.
And I also showed the Future Proof Committee an image which is on Google Maps, and it shows a logging truck overtaking a cyclist going up the divvy. The logging truck's in the middle of the road just coming round a blind corner, and fortunately, the Google image shows that there was nothing else coming the other way, If there had been, then there would have been a logging truck and some other vehicle. Mm. Or there would have been a cyclist pushed off the road, one
so
or the other.
The Google car got that photo?
Yes.
Excellent. So well done, Google.
You look at the 2013 photos for Google Maps going up Bidivi, and you can see this slowly unfolding.
Ah, we should pull those photos out. That would be fun. We should just put that on our social media for the fun of it, really. Okay, so what I'm trying to drive at here is that if we are going to increase our population to, let's say, three times as many people, there's going to have to be a lot of money spent on State Highway 23 to bring it up to standard for that amount of cars. And then we have the issue that if it gets, like Cyclone Gabrielle again, if it gets broken and we have to use back roads and we've got three times as many people using the back roads, we know that the back roads were falling apart under the weight of all the cars after Cyclone Gabrielle. So
even with the current traffic? Yeah.
With the current traffic, yes. Yeah, so three times as many traffic, those roads will not cope.
And it could be worse because we could have had a major flood down the valley in between or just to the east of the Hamilton side of Tiuku.
Yeah.
And if that bridge went, then the only other route is round via Kafia.
So at the moment,
Kafia road's pretty bad already. So.
Yeah, so at the moment no one is planning for this crucial issue of Raglan. It's like, yeah, we can build more houses in Raglan, we can do that, and maybe we can plan for the infrastructure for the town, but no one at the moment is thinking about State Highway 23 as the only proper road into Raglan, which is not ready for that.
Because you're getting, 9,000 or so, or housing for 9,000 more people, but then you're having to pay some huge amount to improve State Highway 23. And I don't know how the equations work out on that one, whether it's value for money or not, but I suspect it's not, and certainly nobody's looked at it so far.
So future-proof, the people who should be looking at it are not looking at it, or maybe they are now that you've told them?
Probably.
Like you said that they were. You said to me off the air that they were surprised, but listening.
Well, they asked me for a copy of the presentation, which is unusual. They usually just look totally bored and say, next, please.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's a good sign and a bad sign at the same time. Okay, so we're talking about planning a community, and that's an issue. We should be driving less to Hamilton.
Yep, but of course, meanwhile...
Which means having more work here, more business here, more industry here, but that would be industry that's tailored to produce stuff that's useful for the community, not something that's producing knickknacks that then goes over and gets sold overseas or, something like that. So there has to be a strategy and some direction coming from presumably from local body institutions or some kind of local institution, and not just leaving everything to the market if we want to make our town work properly.
Yeah, well, that's why, as we've been discussing, we need a structure plan to work out how these things all fit together and whether they do actually make sense when you look at the whole rather than individual bits.
Yeah, and I think it's worth saying to the people who do development in town, we've spoken to the community, and the community wants to see this sort of thing in town. Like, we want to see SWAP come back. Can you guys do something about that? Like, they won't necessarily be able to, but I think it's worth saying to people in those positions, this is what the community wants, and let's try and work together. Which is, and none of that's happening at the moment.
Yep. Maybe we can work out what it takes to actually develop that land behind the corrugated iron, which has been there. I've lost count of how long it's been there. It must be almost 20 years now.
Well, it's long enough that I was surprised at the Christmas in the Park thing that they did. What was Christmas at Wee Nearer? Because I remembered it being just a gravel kind of area, but it's been there so long that grass has grown over most of the gravel. It was quite nice.
There used to be houses there at one time.
Yeah, I don't remember. It must have been before. Was that before you or I arrived?
No, it was probably about 2003-04.
Okay.
I think they evicted the tenants there and knocked the houses down.
Yeah. Well, that's a shame, isn't it, given our current plight?
Yeah. There was an article about it in the Chronicle at the time, but nothing came of it except a corrugated iron fence.
Yeah, well, we weren't short of houses then. I mean, it's got a nice paint job on the fence. I'll give it that.
I think we were short, but we weren't as aware as we are now.
It was not a crisis. But there's also, the council did extend the CBD area somewhat, so there's extra capacity for
that. The Bancart Street and parts of Wallace Street.
Just requires someone to spend some money. And we know the difficulties.
That's the issue behind the corrugated iron fence, that the land is zoned, but people aren't using it. So, and it comes back to that question of actually how do you get that incentive if zoning doesn't work? Because the only thing that planners can usually do is change the zoning, and yet there are other things which mean that changes of zoning don't actually make any difference.
Well, they could threaten to change it to rural, which would devalue the value of the land quite drastically. This will never happen, but it's an amusing idea that the council would do that to force someone to build a building. Like, oh, we're going to zone it rural if you don't, and the value will plummet. I've got lots of good ideas that will never be used.
Maybe you could get that fast-tracked.
Why not? That's the best way to do it before anybody catches on.
Because fast-track is one of the other issues I'm hoping that people are putting submissions in on. And, of course, we heard from Trans-Tasman Resources that they're not going to be continuing with their application to the Environmental Protection Agency to do seabed mining. And there's a speculation that they're just waiting for the fast-track legislation to go through.
But of all the fast-track ideas, theirs is the most likely to actually not happen because the fishing industry doesn't like what they're doing.
Uh-huh. And Shane Jones is working for the fishing industry.
Yeah. Well, Shane Jones has found himself working for the seabed mining industry and the fishing industry, and I think he's been getting calls from the fishing industry saying, hey, do you want our funding in the future, buddy?
But there's still good reasons to put in submissions, and I discovered the easiest way is to go to the Greenpeace website and have a look for the fast track section of their website, and they've got quite an easy submission form to fill in.
You know, I'm wondering if the government actually went to the Greenpeace website themselves and went, okay, all the stuff that they're into, we're going to do the opposite.
Maybe.
Because it feels like they've got a list from somewhere of things that greenies will hate, and they're trying to do them all.
So, yeah, but and they do want to get re-elected in 2.5 years' time. So,
are you sure? They're not behaving like it.
I think every politician wants to get re-elected.
Yeah, no, you're right, I've been a little
sarky. As was being pointed out, they're just getting a pay rise on their already exorbitant salaries. So
fantastic.
It's a good reason to want to get re-elected, if nothing else.
Mm. Hey, can we look at, you did send me some costs of things that are in the district plan.
Yeah, it puzzles me that they're putting some charges up quite a lot, but other charges they're not putting up at all.
Well, let's just read out. I just want to read out a few of these numbers, like district-wide footpaths, walking and cycling, $1 million they're proposing to spend, right?
And then there's another chunk, which I don't understand what the difference is, which is another, is it $330,000 there? It's a bit of about $1.3 million altogether, not just $1 million.
I'll go through the list just to give people an idea of how they spend the money. Wangaroa Road Bridge, walking and cycling. This is in Ngarawahia Township, $150,000. Ngarawahia Walkways, $490,000. Tamahere Walkways, $213,000. Te Kōwhai Walkways, $20,000. They're not getting much. Bus shelters, new signage and lighting, $100,000. Huntly Rahui Pōkeka Railway Station Park and Ride, $500,000.
So that's quite a lot, especially for something which might get cut in the next few months.
Mm. Munro Road 355 Bridge upgrade to two-lane bridge, $2 million in Pōkeno.
Yep. Well, this is where we start talking about the millions rather than the thousands or hundreds of thousands.
So $2 million to double-lane their bridge. So we need to remember that in Raglan. And their population has grown tenfold in the last decade or two. So that's the kind of pressure you need on a bridge to get it double-laned, folks. And we don't have that.
And we've got quite a few of those bridges along State Highway 23. So, yeah.
But that's not from our rates, is it? We're just talking rates here from District Council. Upgrade another bridge in Harrisville Road, Tuakau, $2 million. An intersection of Tuakau, $2 million. So they're spending money up there because that's where the crazy population growth is. Why did you pull those things out, John, to show us?
Well, it gives an idea of how much money is being spent on roading. So that's where that third of money that's going to roading is going in our rates bills.
Renewals for the Ngarawahia main office, $1.6 million.
Yeah, you did ask the councillors about that, and I was surprised how little they knew about it. So we don't have any breakdown of that.
So my thing I was curious about was in that, so this is 9% of our rates go to the council buildings. Was there any new buildings in there? I don't think there was.
Well,
I think
they said there wasn't.
Yeah, so it was just upgrades and maintenance.
And refurbishing and things like that. Yeah,
which, I mean... And again,
they also mentioned that there were now about 400 staff, whereas a decade or so ago, it was more like 200. So we've roughly doubled the number of staff.
But didn't we also pick up the northern part of the district as well?
So well, no, that was after taking over the Franklin area.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, the figures have roughly doubled since then. And the population has increased and the amount of work they've got to do has increased. But and the government's talking about 6% cuts in civil servants and across the board. I'm not sure whether it would be justified here, because the problem seems to be that the councillors don't know the detail, because you were trying to get it out of them on Friday, and it seemed that they didn't really know much more than you or I about these budget figures.
Well, the only person who knows the detail is the person who put their section together in the council. Yeah, I mean, it is a big unwieldy thing.
So maybe on Friday we can start asking more questions about these and find out more about them.
Yeah, if the staff are there, yeah. So there was one thing I wanted to mention. Like, we're talking about council buildings. I've pulled up this comparative document comparing our district to other districts and Auckland City, and we've got 45 community halls in our district. Auckland has 182. Waipa has 21. Hamilton only has, where's Hamilton there? 14. So we've got a ridiculous, well, it's not ridiculous because it's great to have a community hall, but we've got a really high number proportionally. And there's one there that's not included. I saw you asking a question about the Te Uku Hall.
Te Uku Hall, yeah.
So that's not, the council doesn't run that. That someone set up a system where there's a piece of farmland somewhere that gets leased out, and the money from the leasing pays for the maintenance of the Te Uku Hall. So they have, and they have their own hall committee, and it's like completely independent of council.
Because I thought Tamata also was an independent hall, but that figure is in there.
Yeah, so it mustn't be. Is the assumption. Yeah. But yeah, we haven't
actually, something to ask on Friday.
We haven't, yeah, we don't know that one for sure. I don't know if anyone, someone would have to look that up, John. Anyway, so what I'm saying is we got a lot, there's an issue that our district has, which is we've got more roads than most districts per person and more little towns than a lot of other districts. And so all our costs are higher than other districts. And we were talking about that at the start. It's just an issue we have. Yeah.
I also noticed that the Sustainability Committee is meeting tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that they're looking at giving $4,000 odd to an air training corps to provide for an extra classroom at Te Kōwhai Airfield. It does seem to me odd that a Sustainability Committee is looking at giving money to people to encourage them to fly more.
Well, it's not just sustainability, it's sustainability and well-being. And when they created the committee, they took all sorts of responsibilities out of other committees and put it into there. So there's, I don't know the list of all those different little areas, but it might just be that it naturally comes under that, like civil defence comes under it, which is not what you think of when you think of sustainability and well-being necessarily.
That's well-being, but I'm not sure whether learning to fly is well-being.
Well, if State Highway 23 goes down, it might be the only way to get to Raglan, John.
Okay, maybe that's the backup
plan. Yeah, that is, well, heaven help us. All right, look, we've reached the end of the show. I don't know, that was pretty incoherent, wasn't it, John?
We often are, but I hope we've covered quite a number of interesting issues and that people might go and have a look at the various Facebook pages that have got information, or in the case of Greenpeace, their submission page on the fast track. So, yeah.
So John's put on Whangaroa Environmental Defence, which is the page that John runs, has got quite a bit of stuff on there. So you can go to that Facebook page. If you go to raglanradio.com, you can catch up with the interview, which was written up with Mike Keir and Lisa Thompson. And on Friday, I don't know the time, but I think it might be 5 o'clock in the afternoon at the supper room. Council staff and presumably councillors, community board members will be in the supper room to talk about the annual plan, which is how they spend your money and mine, John.
Yep.
And go ahead.
I'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you're on the air tonight?
Yep. So looking again at some of these, and of course playing that interview that we've just been talking about where you talked to two councillors, which was good.
Yeah, it was good to have two. It's not like that. It's not that they disagree with each other, but people say things in different ways. And you get a fuller feel for how things are. Yep, thanks for coming in, John.
Thank you.
All right, folks, time to wrap up the show. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.